Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome, everybody. This is Mike TV episode 44, in which we will be discussing Westworld season 3, episode 5, entitled Genre. My name is Lisa. Joining me is my fabulous co-host, Dean. Welcome, Dean.
I'm tripping through my comedy genre right now. Oh, I'm not looking forward to that last act, though.
Mm-hmm. That last act's the real world.
That's right.
Or is it? What did you think of this episode? We're just diving right in.
I really liked this episode. I love the cinematography of it. I really enjoyed Caleb tripping through his different acts, and I thought we got a lot of good. It was a good exposition episode, and they did a good job of if we push back to Watchmen, a lot of non-expository exposition going on to learn a lot about Serac during this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Serac stuff was great. Boy, they cast a great actor to play young Serac. He looked just like him. At first, I thought they used that same technology that they did with Anthony Hopkins last season.
Right.
But no, actually, this is actually a young actor, and he looks... perfectly cast.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, the Serac stuff was great. The Caleb trip to me was a little underwhelming.
Oh no, I thought it built great tension. There was a fantastic chase scene. He's
was
blowing shit up, which
though?
Was awesome. Yeah, it was great.
It?
All practical
effects.
It felt
fillery to me a little bit, and I don't complain about this show. I love Westworld. I know it's a spectacle to behold. The acting is wonderful. I think sometimes the writing leaves a little, and maybe it's not even the writing. Maybe it was in the, I just don't know. We'll have to suss it out. Maybe you'll convince me otherwise. Actually, I did my notes. So on the first watch, I liked it. Then on the second watch, I felt like this is taking forever. And I felt like, I'm rereading my notes a little bit. I was like, this is kind of boring, actually, when you look at it on paper.
Oh, I don't know. As soon as Ash and Giggles showed up, I was ready to go.
Sure, but they weren't even in it enough. And it was hard to even read Giggles' shirt till about halfway, till like
when you got straight up angry in it.
Yeah. but I actually pinpointed it. I think my issues with this episode were no Maeve, no Charlotte, no Man in Black.
But we've had episodes like that all season.
How dare they?
We've had episodes like that all season.
Yeah, but this is in an 8-episode arc. This is egregious. They left Maeve on the floor, stabbed through the gut, right? That's where we left her. How, to go away for a whole episode from that? Then, of course, you saw the next time on the trailer for episode 6, already jumping ahead.
It's all over Maeve.
Yeah, it is all over Maeve. So that's great. Yeah, I want Maeve.
Come on, you went the whole first episode, you didn't even think twice about it until you saw her in the in credits.
Oh no, I thought about it. The fact that she was in the credits, and I'll tell you, they get me too, because I watch the credits every time waiting for
her. Yeah, right? They did kind of spoil us there in the first episode.
But the fact that they threw her in a post-credit scene was what, to me, really helped really make that first episode great. To me, there was a lot of just walking around. It was great. There was great imagery, but it was a lot of just walking around. Great music, just walking around. And how many side glance shots do we need of Aaron Paul? I mean, like him giving the slow side
trying to look
glance.
High. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in the long run, I get what you're saying, especially considering we only have two episodes left. It seems like it dragged. We do have three more left.
Yeah, six, so, seven, eight.
Well,
this is fine.
You know, in that case, then I guess I'm not as bad. I could see it's a short series, season, so I get why, like, an episode like this where they don't seem to talk about half the characters. But I don't know. We had these same issues with Legion last year where, you know, the third to last episode, we're like, why are they talking about they're not mentioning this person, they're not mentioning that person, and it all wrapped up fine. I thought this was a great Caleb and Dolores episode. I thought it was just a fun, if this was a 15 or 20 episode season, this would have been a great episode, because you wouldn't have thought twice about the fact that, like, there's so much left that we have to worry about. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the issue, is that it's such a short season that you do think about those things. But if you take all that away, this was a fun episode. A lot of, I mean, I do love they ramped up the action this season. We're getting this cool futuristic car chase with these future cars, the awesome weapon of the heat seeking or target seeking rocket launcher.
Right. Sure.
And the fact that Aaron Paul's high the whole time. I love it. Like I do love him just face acting the fact that he's just wasted the whole time. I like it.
Okay. I mean, what's not to love about Aaron Paul? He's great. It just felt like it was too much of it, but I do. And I also pinpointed the other issue. I've just decided, and you know, RIP, I guess we're spoiling the whole show, but anybody who's listening has watched it surely. But I decided I was over Liam Dempsey, and how much of his freaking whining and winching did we need to hear? Winching. What is this? What is that a phrase from that we've heard winching say? Oh, what was the show I was watching? It was Game of Thrones. Mm. Yeah, it was Tormund, Giant's Bane, was it Tormund? It was like, that's, if you're talking, your winching is basically like whining. But anyway, like, how much of Liam Dempsey's winching did we need to hear? And I do appreciate the fact, and so, you know, fine, I'm kind of glad he's dead. I don't want it, or is, you know, of course they'll probably bring him back, but
yeah,
he was annoying the shit out of me as this, like, tag along annoyance. But I did love, if you noticed, his shirt just said basic.
Yeah.
So I liked that, that imagery there, because he was so basic in the end. Anyway, let's dive in, shall we?
Let's go.
Also, I think maybe what annoyed me, sorry, before we dive in, it was hard to take notes on this one. At first, I thought I would actually lump all the each character story all together, but it just proved too difficult because of all the voiceover and the in and out of people's POV. So I again went scene by scene, but still felt like this was a difficult one to really capture in notes. So hopefully I did all right. So you tell me. Here we go. So we open with a Serac voiceover. He's speaking in French about how he and his brother were essentially the sole survivors of what appears to be, I guess, maybe a nuclear bomb that wiped out their town. And he says, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Paris, their city. Yeah, that's right. So they came to the New World, I guess America, determined to build a god so that they could save humankind from destruction. And then he said, goes on to say, but there were things that they were unable to predict, anomalies. And then we cut to this zoomed out image of Rehoboam. And then, no, this is a new way we're seeing Rehoboam all through this this episode. And this is the first one where it's like circle within a circle, or it looks like kind of zooming in and out.
It reminded me of a solar eclipse.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. But I mean, it's definitely when it's almost like to show that the machine is analyzing. Right. But anyway, so we see that first image of that. And then we cut to present, or that fades into present day Serac, and he's looking at that image on a watch, which has the Rehoboam face.
Yeah.
Seriously, All right, Mike Fairbanks, make me a watch like that. I'm just going to, everything I see that I want, I'm just going to start demanding that Mike Fairbanks, MAF workshop on Twitter, MAF workshop on Twitter. Everybody should go check out. We retweet his things a lot, but he does 3D printing and makes some of the most awesome things. So,
yeah. And there were definitely a lot of awesome Rehoboam like logos, like all the doors had the logo, like it was basically, you know, the three quarters of the circle and stuff, which was really cool looking.
Yes. The Rehoboam imagery that was present throughout this whole episode. I've made notes of it all throughout. I did find it super cool, but the watch especially delighted me. Anyway, he is meeting with the Brazilian president. This was an interesting scene here, Dean. And I think it's because of the flies. The flies, Dean. Anyway, he's telling this Brazilian president that there's a separatist movement taking place in the north part of Brazil, and he shows them some data on the tablet. And these, meanwhile, these flies just buzzing all around this president. He keeps swatting them away. And so they definitely wanted you to notice the flies, right?
Right.
And you remember about the flies in Westworld season one. So
we always
got
the very initial imagery of the flies landing on Dolores.
Right. I thought this had to be telling us something about, like, is this a simulated world? Is this the real world? I'm very concerned about what they're trying to say there with those flies.
I did think it was interesting that he was there in person. And they make the comment about, like, how rare it is he shows up somewhere in person.
And they're in a very remote spot.
Yeah, and then he does end up in the plane the rest of the episode. But so I don't know. Weird. Very weird. And what does Brazil have to do with our story at this point?
Exactly. Exactly. It was weird. And I almost feel like because the flies were so prominent that we were meant to think twice about what we were seeing here, about if it was real or not. Anyway, they have this, they continue to speaking. Essentially, Serac tells this president that the small group in the North hasn't become a threat yet, but they will soon if the president doesn't increase his private deals on manganese extractions. That he's dealing with his friends. And if he does this, if he cooperates, then the unrest will stop and the whole problem will just go away. So he's like extorting this man, right? He goes on to tell him, you know, we trusted that you'll do as you're told when we ensured your election. So he then says, if you don't do as you're told, your currency will decline. The unrest will heighten and your family will be pulled from your palace in the middle of the night. And then in 6 weeks, I'll just be back to talk to the new president. And then we do see him walk toward his plane, and the camera pans out and that they are in this like super remote area. Yeah. And I do have in my notes, interestingly enough, this was not a hologram speaking to the president. He was actually there in real life.
Right.
And so to opening credits, or was he in real, or were the people around him not real life?
On surface, I got from this. So let's take away the fact that there's something weird here. On surface, what I got from this was it just shows how powerful he is. Right. Like he's obviously making elections happen.
Right.
He even says, like, I'll be here to do the next person, which is that guy right there with the mustache.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
He points out who the next president's going to be, which I love. Mm-hmm. So I on the surface, at least it shows, you know, which Westworld rarely is surface level, but surface level, it just shows how powerful he is.
And what about these manganese extractions? You think we should have paid attention to that? He says he wants the president to cease his dealings with these manganese extractions.
What is manganese?
Is an element, right?
I know, but maybe that's what they make the clones out of.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's what makes the white goo.
That white goo, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Maybe. I don't know.
Mm. All right. Anything else about the scene before we move on?
No. I liked it. I liked him pushing his weight around.
I definitely like this man.
Oh, Vince Cancel is he's such a fantastic actor. Like yeah. he, like I said, he is the if you looked up snooty Frenchman in the dictionary, his picture would be there.
And then the younger version, of course.
Yeah.
Right there next to him.
Yeah.
Because that guy was, were we talking about it on air or before we started recording? That guy was perfectly cast as young Ciroc.
Maybe both.
So we're repeating ourselves. This is what we get when we speak before we start recording. We will learn our lesson one day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we haven't already said this, and I don't think we have, but this young Ciroc, he was just brilliantly cast. He looked exactly like him, and he could act. He had facial mannerisms and everything, just like Vincent Cassel.
Yep.
Great job. Great job, casting directors. All right. After the opening credits, there's a shot of Rehoboam, and we see it's doing that same image ring thing, or multiple ring thing, and we do see the words accessing file or accessing a file. And back to young Ciroc and his brother, and they are meeting Liam Dempsey Sr. for the first time. And, of course, he's the president of a large tech company called Insight, and they're introducing him to Rehoboam.
And this is not someone we know, right? We talked about this earlier in the season, that who is his father, but it's just a guy.
Yeah, just some guy. Another guy. Liam, yeah. Yep, you're right. So, Lisa was wrong on that one.
Kind of the same thing with Ciroc's brother. Like, he's just another guy. Which,
yeah, Jean-Mi.
Yeah.
By the way, I've learned how to say Ciroc's first name. It is Engerard. Engerard. It's Engerard. Like Engard. Like Engard before a sword fight, but it's Engerard. Like Engerard.
And then what's his system called? His system's called Rhododendron?
Rehoboam.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So anyway, and his brother was Jean-Mi. they're introducing Liam Dempsey Sr. to early iterations of Rehoboam. In fact, it's not even quite called Rehoboam yet. Anyway, they're saying, either they're telling him or we're hearing it in the voiceover, that they need the data that Insight has. And we see the brothers showing him. Then we see that Dempsey is mad. Dempsey Sr. is mad. He's saying that this is still not working. He's seen half a dozen models called by other names such as Saul and David, and now this one, Solomon. And so it's interesting because Rehoboam is like in this line of succession of these Hebrew kings in the Bible. The Old Testament of the Bible. So it's interesting that they were, and should that be a clue too, that they were naming early iterations of the machines, you know, kind of going through the succession of these Hebrew kings. So before landing on the Rehoboam. So I don't know if that means much, but there you go. Anyway,
even Ciroc's a Jew.
That could be. And then he's really working with the people over on Plot Against America. This is all connected.
Yeah, he's also working with Al Pacino on Hunters.
Yeah, it's all connected. Okay, even young Liam Dempsey is there. And even that kid they cast to play young Liam Dempsey was really well cast. Dempsey Sr. continues to rant about how he's not going to fund another dollar and into this project. And Ciroc's brother, Jean-Mi, leans in close to Ciroc and says that they're going to need to kill this guy. And Dempsey Sr. is just still ranting, saying he's going to pull the plug on the whole project, and then he leaves. And we continue to hear the Ciroc voiceover and see young Ciroc take his brother's head in his hands and say that his brother actually had indeed created a god, and the god that they were looking for, and that it was working, and that the problem here was that his brother just had a troubled mind. So we will come back to that. Anything else on this first meeting of Dempsey Sr.?
Guy seems like another douchebag, just like William's father-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, James Delos.
Delos.
Just like another setup
like
guy.
He has nothing to do with the actual technology, just he's going to buy it up and profit off of it.
Makes you wonder how a man that dipshittish, word of the day, dipshittish, you know, how a man like such an idiot like that came into such power in such a great company, unless, again, this was by Ciroc Brothers Design, you know.
Well, no, but back then, Rehoboam hadn't been created yet, so that's we have true. To assume he had his own money by then.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was just a savvy businessman, but yeah, he definitely he definitely doesn't like what he's seeing here at this point, or really throughout the whole throughout his whole story. Anyway, back on his plane, present day Ciroc is being informed that Rehoboam found discrepancies coming out of the Yakuza. Along with other encrypted, and there was also connected in other, it was also connected in other encrypted devices in Jakarta, Berlin, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. And actually, the one from Los Angeles was inside Liam Dempsey's personal compound. And he says, you know, this rebel wasn't working alone. And then he shows him a picture of Dolores on his tablet, and Ciroc screams that he wants her caught. All right. So he mentions these four cities, Jakarta, Berlin, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and about how these are the discrepancies that Rehoboam's finding. And then also the one where the Yakuza are, which, where was that?
Thailand, wasn't it?
Where?
Well, actually, I don't remember, because she was in Thailand, and then she found...
Or she was in Singapore.
Singapore, not Thailand.
So maybe Singapore.
Maybe.
So Maeve's in Singapore, Charlotte's in San Francisco, Dolores is in Los Angeles. Who's in... So we've got Berlin and Jakarta. I heard Kim Renfro mapped all this out, and like there's like a Kim Renfro is somebody we reference often because she has great blogs or articles about Westworld deep dive coverage and that. But anyway, there's like she mapped it all out, and there's one city here with a host that has yet to be revealed to us.
Right, and we talked about that before, that there we think there's at least one, if not possibly two. Pearls were not accounted for yet.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, we cut to Dolores and Caleb and Liam all walking through like a tunnel, kind of like where we last saw them. And Dolores is saying they have to keep moving so that Ciroc can't track them, or Rehoboam can't track them. And then she puts the hologram glasses on Liam so that he can see who she is. And it's interesting. We see the scan goes over the glasses as he scans her. And then he says to her that she's not even registered in the system. And Dolores tells him that they have to work together and find a way to defeat Ciroc, or that they will die. They'll all die. And that she really needs his private key into the system. And Liam doesn't want to give it to her. And then he also kind of hangs back a little bit and tries to privately convince Caleb that Dolores is using him just like she used Liam. But Caleb tells him that, you know, Caleb already tells him that Liam already took everything from him when he decided his fate and sent him off to war and slaughtered his friends. And then he says, then Liam takes a look into his glasses and says something like, "You think I killed your friend?" And then he gets like really paranoid and concerned and for whatever reason, this makes no sense at all, except for just to have this, you know, take place in the episode. But so he's seen something in the glasses that's not evident to Caleb, but it makes him paranoid. And so he takes out the genre drug and injects it into Caleb.
Yeah. I'm assuming, because I'm assuming that he's seen in his glasses that he's supposed to kill him. I think he thinks he's going to kill him. But obviously, we get this idea throughout the episode that even though there are predictions, there is still points of choice. They mentioned that a couple times. There are still points of free choice. And I think, obviously, we're going to see Ash later make a free point of choice that wasn't predicted necessarily.
All right, good.
And so I think if that hadn't happened, I'm assuming Caleb would eventually have killed
Liam.
I'm assuming, I really hope we're going to get that scan or whatever it was to see what he saw.
We've got to at this
because
point.
Because he asked him even as he's dying, what did you see? What am I?
And he says, so you did it. Yeah, so even as those scenes that are flashing in Caleb's mind that were so brief but so interesting,
right?
That's definitely for sure going to have to get pieced together.
So I think we're going to see that. But that was my thought, that was that sense. He was seeing him kill him in the future. And then, unfortunately, someone's going to step in and do it way before that.
Yeah, so injecting him with the genre drug, he's thinking he could change that fate.
Well, not even that. I think he was just trying to get away at that point.
Oh,
he's
scared. I love he tried to run off. He didn't get very far. Anyways, Caleb falls down to the ground. And this is funny because we do hear we see Liam start to run off, and then we just only hear it. And we hear Dolores, you know, quickly overtaking him. And you just hear, like, thudding and, you know, like, smacking around noises. But anyway, Caleb falls to the ground. He has visions of his time back in war, just like a brief couple of visions. And then as he comes to, Dolores is getting the explanation from Liam of the drug that he injected him with. And we are still seeing things completely from Caleb's point of view. Especially when we're seeing it from Caleb's point of view in these first scenes, as the trip starts, it's going in and out of black and white, kind of like a film noir motif. But really, it's just him like shifting his eyes side to side, and everything is just really just kind of slowing down. That's the effect. I just thought they could have done more with it. It was just, when you compare it to it again, I believe we said this before we started recording, or maybe right after, but you said you very much compare it to the nostalgia trip that Angela Abar goes on Watchmen. I believe it's episode 7 of Watchmen. It's a great episode. And that trip was just really, really, really well done. And I just felt like this one was just slow-mo effects with Aaron Paul's shifty eyes and cool music.
But the idea is that each stage is a different genre of film.
I know, so I get it, but it just
the first genre
well
was
done.
Like the first genre was like this thriller horror, and so they're all talking normal, and every time it goes to him, he's looking at it, it's black and white, it's all slow-mo crazy. But then once he gets out of the car in a minute, you know, it goes into action mode and he gets into action mode. So I like that.
Right.
This didn't last the whole time.
No,
but I did appreciate the fact that like you get the idea that this is affecting him. I like the way that they did it. I thought it was great. It didn't last too long to me, so I appreciated it.
It could have cut it all by about half. But anyway, they get into a driverless car.
Let's put it this way: it was nothing like season 1 of Legion, where Audrey Plaza is doing black and white silent movie.
Yes.
Now that would have been fantastic if it showed him in black and white, and when he looks over, it cut to them doing, it had dialogue there and they weren't actually speaking. That would have been fantastic.
Yes, or like change the costuming and hair from his POV, like where he's seeing it in real, you know.
Absolutely.
Anything. They could have done small touches just to make it a little bit more effective. I felt like because each one only really changed with the music.
Yeah, you're
the black and white was only present in this first one, and then after that, it was really just a musical change. their surroundings.
No, there's a little bit of the lights were a little bit highlighted differently.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like the fade was a little less around his POV. Yeah. No, they could have done more to differentiate the genres too. If you weren't really paying attention to the music, and when I watch it with the subtitles, thankfully the names of the musical numbers came up. So that's how I was able to get them. But I was like, oh, I see what they're doing here. Because it was all movie themes.
Yeah.
All musical movie themes. So this first one was just like this was the only one that was unnamed. But, you could tell by the tune that it was just probably a Ramin Djawadi take on like a film noir kind of thriller, stylized music. And I mean, the music really worked. The music I loved through all of this. I just felt like there wasn't enough to set them all apart to make them all interesting. So it just felt like retread through all of them. Anyway, let's see. So they get in the driverless car and they get into the driverless car and another car starts to follow them. And this is where Caleb takes notice and tells them that they're using the system to track them. And Dolores starts to again demand the private key from Liam so that they can erase them from the system and essentially get away from, from being tracked. And then we hear that an Amber Alert goes out for the vehicle that they're in, and suddenly they're trapped in the vehicle, which I found that was a really cool touch. And the music really intensifies, and we still are in Caleb's perspective. He's trying to kick the door and get them out of the car. And finally, as the men that are chasing them are closing around them, and they're still trapped in the car, Liam finally does give his access key to Dolores, and she's able to override the system in the car, and they speed off. And then the music switches to Ride of the Valkyries, a very well-known song, and they go on this high-speed car chase, and Dolores has this rocket launcher, and she gives it to Caleb and tells him just to point and shoot, and she has him go up out of the roof of the car, and meanwhile she's navigating the car, telling it to take really sharp right turns and which is just knocking poor Caleb all over the place. Like, she essentially creates this homemade sunroof out of the car, tells him to pop out and shoot this rocket. So he takes his first shot and, of course, misses. And he says, "I missed," but she's not worried about it. I believe that she is able to change the course of this rocket midstream. I don't believe that it was already...
Oh, 100%.
She changes the course of the grenade. It turns around and indeed comes back up from behind and hits the car. Now, that was a freaking killer effect. That was awesome.
Yeah, we see several. I mean, we've been seeing this throughout the season, but we see several examples here over the next few minutes of her control over technology with the motorcycle again, which I love the fact the motorcycle comes back in.
That's my next line. She brings back her driverless motorbike, and this time it's armed with a bomb.
Yeah, she's definitely like Maeve in real life, and in the real world.
If it is the real world.
In future world,
thank you. So then they get to like the end of the road and kind of prepare for a standoff, and that the motorbike that's armed with a bomb rolls in and takes out a pursuer or a car just in real glorious fashion. Just the bike kind of just rolls under the car and explodes. It was cool. And then as this is happening and they're all just kind of, Dolores and Caleb are lined up with guns waiting for the final pursuer, the music switches to the theme song from Love Story, which was a movie from the 70s, which I bet you've probably never seen. I've actually never seen it because I've heard it's really, really sad. And I don't just like dig a movie that I know is going to end badly. In fact, I try to avoid those because who wants to be sad? Anyway, but this was a very popular love story movie from the 70s, like probably one of the most iconic movies from that era. And this song, again, very recognizable. And I guess if you want to just go back and watch that movie. It's called Love Story.
Yeah, I can't remember the two stars. It's a Ryan O'Neal classic. Ryan O'Neal, Ally McGraw.
Ally McGraw, thank you. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic movie. Tommy Lee Jones, one of his early appearances there.
I didn't just look
all this up on IMDb.
I would venture to guess it's about a love story.
It is. It's about a boy and a girl from different backgrounds who fall in love regardless of their upbringing. And then tragedy strikes.
Of course. Of course it does. So it's just another take on Romeo and Juliet. Anyway, but the music, that theme song is recognizable and beautiful. But anyway, this is showing Caleb, like, looking at Dolores in awe and wonder and perhaps a little bit of love, a spark of, you know, it's just basically as this music swells, he's given her the look, you know, he's looking at her from a completely different lens, a love story lens, if you will. Anyway, Dolores just continues while Caleb is just giving her the moon eyes. Dolores just shoots up that final vehicle. And then their backup arrives. So they really don't even need the backup anymore. So basically these two people just become toadies now. And hey, it's Lita Waithe and Marshawn Lynch again. Yay. This time I know their name.
Yeah.
This time
I
know
that awesome music pop. Like, as soon as I heard that music, I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. And their names on the show are Ash and Giggles. Yes. I love that. So Lena Waithe plays Ash and Marshawn Lynch plays Giggles. He's wearing that same shirt. Maybe it's his only shirt.
Yeah.
So we could see the shirt. But what was annoying me is, like, I'm spending the whole time like, I want to get a glimpse of what his shirt says, because now I'm, you know, heightened.
Yeah, no, I think at first they were all lit up.
At a what?
I said, I think at first all the words were lit up.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I thought the same thing. I was looking at his shirt hoping to see what his emotion was, but they were all lit up to begin with. And then later on, we do see one specific one
light up. Yeah, we see a couple. I think I've got a note of a couple different ones. So anyway, they do, Ash and Giggles do recognize Liam Dempsey, and Dolores tells him that they need him alive. So then Giggles recognizes that Caleb is on genre, and he says, all right, it's 5 trips in 1, a movie marathon. And then he tells him to watch out for the last act. And then Liam mentions again that Dolores won't be able to access the system unless she's standing at the node. And of course, she meaning at the base of the Rehoboam. And he tells her, like, he's almost like, ha ha, you can't be in two places at once. And of course, she calls New Chibs, showing us that she indeed can be in multiple places at once.
Multiple places.
Only Dolores. So she calls New Chibs. Yay, New Chibs. This might be the last episode with him, though, I'm sad to say.
Yep.
New Chibs is at the Insight headquarters, and he has Bernard with him. And, you can see that Bernard's just kind of following him around, not saying anything. And Dolores tells New Chibs, make sure you protect our friend. And then that's when we see that he has indeed been controlling Bernard with that remote control device. And so he clicks it and essentially brings Bernard back online or back to consciousness. And then New Chibs uses the new access code that he's just received of Liam Dempsey's that Dolores just sent to him. And he uses it on Rehoboam and explains to Bernard that this is how they see the future, meaning the people. And this is how they actually make the future. And Bernard asks what Dolores wants with it. And New Chibs doesn't really give him a straight answer, but says, you know, it's not easy. You're of two minds, Bernard, and I know it's not easy living in someone else's body. Chibs answers, you're of two minds, and I think it's Bernard that says, it's not easy living in someone else's body. They have a tendency to break through. And then he asks New Chibs if he's ever questioned what Dolores is asking him to do. But then their conversation is interrupted when they hear that the computer has begun initiating the transfer. So Bernard knows that Dolores is in New Chibs. So what is he saying? He's saying that Old Chibs is breaking through at this point? Is that what he's cautioning here?
Well, you know, it brings into the fact that we talked about with Charlotte and Dolores, about how Charlotte talked about, or Dolores talked about, yes, how Charlotte felt like she was breaking through. So I don't know if it's maybe something where, obviously it's Dolores, but they had to have mapped and taken all the personality from the old person so that they can make sure they fake that person, mm-hmm, perfectly.
But Bernard's question to him directly, if he's ever questioned, if New Chibs has ever questioned what Dolores is asking him to do. She is Dolores. So who's questioning? Old Chibs?
Well,
this is,
well,
so
we
talked.
So again, we also talked about, or I posited that instead of just making copies, these are pearls from old people.
Mm-hmm.
And that she kind of rewrote over them. And so it is possible that these old pearls are cracking through. So I don't know.
All right. Maybe.
But I did definitely, I noticed that and I thought, yeah, like, okay, here we go. Still with this whole, I mean, you know, it started off with Charlotte saying it feels like she's cracking through and trying to chew through.
Right.
But Charlotte obviously was a real person. She wasn't a host to begin with. She,
right,
wasn't
and
programmed
Martin
to begin with.
Was as well.
Was a real person.
Real person.
So
that's
again,
what I thought. But you're right. It could be whoever the brain ball originally came from.
Right. So I don't know. I think that is going to be something that'll come up soon.
Maybe it will be Teddy after all, or Clementine, or who knows? Arnold. All right. Back to Dolores. And the group. I just started calling them Dolores and gang. And yeah, we see that Dolores is receiving the files on Ciroc. And as those are uploading to her, Caleb starts to switch to the next genre. And this time it's a song called Nightclubbing by Iggy Pop. And all the while they're walking through a subway station, and Caleb just continues to look around with paranoia at everyone. And they eventually get on a subway. So great. Great musical score. But again, just a whole lot more of Caleb just looking around. Paranoid.
He's on the drugs, man. That's what you do
I
when
get
you're on
it.
The drugs.
I get it. But it's just that, you know, they could have done a lot more in this episode and edited those scenes a lot. Anyway, another Rehoboam accessing files scene. And now Ciroc continues his voiceover. And I should say, this whole voiceover, which the reveal at the end of who he's speaking to was cool. But yeah, this whole time, this voiceover is evident that he's speaking to somebody, but we, the audience, don't really know. I kind of just thought, well, he's telling us, the audience, you know? I really
right,
didn't
that's
dive
what I thought,
too deep
too.
Into... Yeah, I didn't dive too deep into, like, who's he talking to?
I thought it was either he's talking to us directly, or this is just, like... I even thought of it like, oh, this was... At some point, he did some kind of memoir or something, and
yeah,
just, yeah. So I didn't think of you talking to a specific person.
Yeah, but I guess we should have known with a show like this that there was going to be a reveal of who he was speaking to or what he was speaking to. Anyway, Ciroc continues his voiceover and talking still about his and his brother's continuing development, and they're showing symptoms. Proof that the machine is working. They're showing this to Dempsey Sr. By showing him stock market projections. And not only these projections, but furthermore, they can actually choose the pattern they want the projections to take. And then it shows how they used this control of the stock market to essentially build up a hedge fund, get all the money that they need, and continue to drive the market toward their personal gain outcomes. And the voiceover continues to speak about how Ciroc and his brother charted the course for the entire human race and how they brought order from chaos. But then it all began to fall apart. Dempsey got greedy, so they decided just to lock him out of what was really going on. But then they also found out that there were outliers or agitators, which were essentially people that they couldn't predict or control. And unfortunately, Surratt comes to the realization that his brother is also one of these outliers and has been driven mad. So interesting. We'll come back to them. Anything else you want to say here about this reveal
before we go back? It'll make more sense when we get back to it.
Yes, it does. So back to the Dolores and the group and the never-ending walk. And Caleb still tripping and still nervously looking around. And Dolores decides it's time for everybody to be able to read their own stories. Oh, they're on the subway now. And I always love a good, like, subway scene. So I love all the flashing lights and the movement and the people. And this one also had, you know, advertising monitors all around. Yeah. So there was movement imagery. So it was a fun scene. But again, you know, okay. So it just, I don't know. I don't want to complain about this show. I love this show. But, you know, it didn't need to continue on like this. It just could have been better. Anyway, they're on the subway. Dolores decides it's time. Everybody can read their own stories that have been written for them. She says, as she puts it, it's time to open their cages. And Liam warns her that this will lead to chaos. And Ash says, you know, she wants to see her file. And Dempsey starts to tell her, Dempsey takes a look at Ash's file and says, there's, you know, bad news, I guess, about the fate of her brother, saying, you know, mm-hmm. you're doing everything for your brother, but his fate will even be worse than yours, or something real ominous. And Caleb is still looking around all slowly, and he spots a guy toward the front of the subway car in a military uniform. And then he begins to tell this story about the military, about rat traps, you know, how they had to set up these rat traps and drown the rats. And how the rats would swim around in the buckets of water forever, suffering until they drowned. But the suffering was because that they had hope. And Caleb compares that scenario to the false hope that people have right now. And he says that he'd rather live in chaos than a world controlled by you. He says that to Liam. So upon hearing this, Dolores tells New Chibs to go ahead and send everyone their insight profiles. And just like that, we start to see the people on the subway, their phones all start ringing. And, you know, we do kind of get this, again, a little bit drawn out overview of just people breaking down at the image, at the stuff they're reading on their phones about not only them, but their children.
Did you pause and read some of them, though?
Yes, I did. They were horrible. They were sad. Yeah. You know, a lady whose daughter commits suicide. Yeah, really horrible stuff. So, yeah, everybody starts freaking out.
And so my thought at this point was, does everybody have a shitty future? Because they sure made it seem like, because surely there would have to be someone in the car there, or someone they walk by who like gets their future and it's like is going to become a millionaire, and they're like, hell yeah, like, you know, like everybody seems to just have the fucking worst future.
Yeah. And I think what really annoyed me also is that I've got it later on in my notes, it's coming up, but this just to show what a dipshit Liam is. He actually thinks that she only did that there for the people at the subway station. Because there's like a scene later on where he's like, you've ruined everybody here at the station. Their lives are all now devastated. And she's like, it's not just everyone at the station. It's everyone in the world. And it's like, why? What would make him think that she would just do it for a select few in their direct vicinity? I mean, again, dipshit. And that just could be poor writing, or again, another way to just kind of extend these scenes to the inevitable death of Liam. They could have just cut a lot of this out. Anyway, let's see. Gonna get back where I left off on my notes. So Dolores also, as everybody's breaking down, Dolores does have this line while they're still in the subway that it's not just about what it knows. It's about what it decides for everyone. So they're really hammering this home with Sirach talking about it, but also Dolores knowing about it, that it's it's not only the machine's knowledge of people, but it's actually the machine's charting the course for people.
Right.
They really hammered this home in so many direct and indirect conversations throughout this episode, which really they'd already made that point a couple episodes ago, right? We knew that already. So I guess maybe that was the other part that was annoying me in taking my notes, especially. Anyway, cut to new Chibs quickly. He's telling Bernard that they all have a role to play and some of them won't survive. And it's time for him to choose a side, meaning Bernard to choose a side. Back to Dolores and the gang, Space Oddity. So now the music changes again. It's a classical version of Space Oddity, that great David Bowie song. And Dolores and the group are now off the subway. They're heading up an escalator. There's, again, beautiful imagery in this subway station. There's like this interesting ceiling fish aquarium above them. Mm-hmm. It was cool. And this is where I finally did get a glimpse of Giggles' shirt. And the word that's lit up is anxious at this point.
Yeah.
And then Liam Dempsey is still rambling on and on about everybody at the train stations have lives have been ruined. Oh, yeah. And this is where Dolores says that she actually sent it to the whole world. We cut back to Bernard. He's standing over this big world map. I do love all the technology and all of that, the fancy technology they're showing. And this big map of the world was great. So it's like a huge wall map, computer screen map, and he is watching essentially the chaos unfold all over the world, you know, kind of like the map lights up as this data is received around the world.
And I made this comment earlier, and I guess I meant it at this point when I said the whole solar eclipse thing. You see the Rehoboam start pulling away, almost like the main white circle is like pulling away from one side. See like way more of the black area from one area, like while Sirach's watching it, and that's what made me think of the whole like eclipse concept.
Oh yeah.
So it's okay. Almost like the like as if his program is the eclipse from the chaos, but it's now being pulled away, and the black is the chaos.
Yes. Oh, good. And as Bernard's watching this, New Chibs explains that people are going off their loops. I like that.
I will miss you, Chibs.
Yeah, I know. Space Oddity continues as Dolores and team are now walking through town, continuing to see people breaking down, freaking out, riots in the street, chaos just everywhere. Caleb still looking around, side glancing at everybody, giving everyone the side eye. Finally, he says, "What genre is this?" And Giggles says, "This is reality."
Mm.
And then a couple of people emerge from a driverless car and point guns directly at Caleb. But before they can shoot him, Dolores jumps in front and takes the three bullets for him right in the gut.
Yep.
And he is shocked to see that these bullets don't even affect her, but still hasn't figured out that she's a robot. So yeah. Dumb Caleb too.
Now, do you think these two people that jumped out, were they supposedly just supposed to be random people who were going to just start shooting people? That's what I thought too.
Yeah. Sirach assassins are on them at this point the whole way, which is why they have to stay on the move. She does keep saying that they have to stay on the move.
Okay.
But again, anyway, yeah, Caleb not too bright, still hasn't figured out.
Yeah.
Dolores isn't human, duh. Anyway, then Dolores quickly takes out those two assassins, no problem. And back to the Sirach voiceover. This time, it's present day Sirach. He's looking at Rehoboam on a panel on the plane. Like there is that big like mural on the plane of Rehoboam, right? So not only his watch, but he's got a bigger version of viewfinder for it as well. And he's learning the fate of those assassins, and he's angry. So, yeah, that's what makes me think it's directly it's his guys. And then we see another Rehoboam accessing file screen of the circle within the circle from his watch. And he continues to talk, and he says it's been 10 years now into their partnership with Dempsey Sr., And Dempsey Sr.'s curiosity has finally gotten the better of him. So he starts poking around in areas where he's been previously shut out. And he finds that Ciroc and his brother have this huge warehouse, like lab, full of people in individual, like isolated rooms, glass rooms. And that Ciroc and his brother have been running experiments on these people. And I will say these rooms look a lot like the Westworld, you know, maintenance rooms, the maintenance areas of Westworld. I did see the parallel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, and it appears that even Ciroc's own brother is in one of these glass cages. And Ciroc approaches Dempsey Sr. Dempsey Sr. and Ciroc then go into, I guess, an office, adjacent office or something. But this is, I don't know if it's like a Ciroc's home. They appear to still be near the labs, though. But this room is full of just circular motif design, right?
You can't
tape the circles all over this room. It was so cool. Anyway, in this office, Ciroc is explaining to Dempsey Sr. that he and his brother were exposed to radiation after the explosion, and they were put on these anti-radiation medications to halt their genetic breakdown. And that's what made him understand that it is possible to edit people. But Dempsey says, but you're experimenting on your brother. And Ciroc says, no, I'm trying to help him. And I should say that the mural of Rehoboam in this scene in the background, instead of being a full circle, it's like a semicircle. There's a chunk of the circle missing. Not so sure what that's all about. But it was interesting. Anyway, Ciroc continues to explain that there are outliers, and it's these outliers that they're actually experimenting on. And what they're doing with these people is they're using these people, the ones that they can't predict or that they can't alter their course, their life course. But they're actually using these people and sending them to war and other high risk sectors, because if they can't control them, might as well just, you know, let them die or be put in harm's way. Dempsey Sr. is pretty appalled by hearing all of this. And Ciroc says, you know, this is exactly the reason why my brother was planning to murder you. Like, essentially, because
allusions, and even Dempsey makes allusions to he's running some kind of experiments on them because he's trying to cure them of their like delusions or whatever. So who knows what he's doing with these people, but he is trying to isolate as many of these discrepancies as possible. Mm-hmm. And then once he has them, who knows what he's doing as far as if it's maybe the implants and some kind of drug or something to try to fix them. But he is doing something apparently to try to cure them.
Yeah.
And considering we don't see his brother die or anything, I'm assuming we're going to get at least one more flashback of what he does end up doing with all these people.
Could his brother be William? Oh, God.
No, I don't think so. I think you're still reaching too much.
Okay.
So you're still trying to hope that they're reaching too much.
Trying to tie it up with a neat bow when it doesn't need to be. Okay.
Yeah, just like Liam's dad was some dude and his brother is some dude.
Right, just some dude. Back to New Chibs and Bernard. New Chibs says that Ciroc will send someone for them. We'll send someone for them, but Bernard needs to see... let's see this facility first and shows them.
Oh. He tells them they need to go find that re-education facility.
Okay. Yeah. And then that's where the ones who don't belong are. And then as he's telling him this, Stubbs pops out of an elevator and a fight breaks out, and doesn't take much for Bernard and Stubbs to overtake New Chibs and take his remote control from him. So then they see more of Ciroc's people on the level below them, and New Chibs says that they should leave before Ciroc's men kill them. And Bernard actually invites New Chibs to come with them. And I thought that was pretty nice. And New Chips says, no, my role here is finished. And he tells Bernard that he's the only one that they can't replace. And then Bernard and Stubbs leave. Siroc's team comes in, led by, I believe it's still the same Mantis, woman, yeah. Right, from Guardians of the Galaxy. They approach New Chibs. They say they're going to bring him to Siroc. And then Siroc comes in the form of a hologram, speaks to New Chibs about how he's always been so loyal and how shocked he was to hear of the breach, that the breach came from inside this location. And New Chibs walks over to his desk, and we see that there's like a little device, an explosive device, located underneath his desk, and he has a remote control to control it. And it doesn't take long for him to reveal that he's actually the one to blame for the breach in the system. And then he pushes the button, and we see from Bernard and Stubbs, POV from right outside the building, we see this upper level floor all burst into flames and explode. So that was a cool POV, but the even cooler one was Siroc's POV, because he was there in hologram form, and as soon as that explosion took place, we see from his POV just Mantis from Guardians of the Galaxy just blows up, and then his hologram feed cuts out. So that was a cool effect, too, because he was just on his plane, and to see her just kind of blow up and then the feed bleeps out.
Right. Awesome. So I really like the scene for a few reasons. I like that Bernard finally realizes he is part of this plan.
Yeah, Bernard and Stubbs leave Insight headquarters, and Bernard tells him Dolores' plan has started, and he's pretty sure he's part of it.
Yeah, and I love that line that he says is, you're the only one we can't replace. And again, that gives me thought that, one, well, even the fact that he asked Chibs to come with him, I think that gives more credence to the fact that Bernard knows that these are pearls that were actually other people first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like
so
that.
So he knows that they're like not just Dolores, that they are someone else too.
They too are being forced to do things perhaps against their will. Right.
And then I like the idea that if he's the only one that can't be replaced, it makes me think that he actually is the pearl that must have this data for the Sector 17 or whatever the you know what I mean? So I think his brain is the one.
You think Bernard has it?
I think that's
somewhere?
Where she hid it. I think she hid it in him.
Ooh, I like
that. That's why she said, we can't be friends, we can't know each other, and send him on his way. And unfortunately, he's the one finding her, but I think he might be the key.
I love that. Yeah. And Maeve could be the gate master, the gatekeeper. What is it? The Ghostbusters? Yeah. Oh, my God.
She's the key master, or he's the key master, she's the gatekeeper.
I love it. All right. My notes literally say this, okay? Back to the most boring, longest walk ever. Dolores and crew are now at the beach. And here the walk finally will end. But anyway, they're now at the beach. Caleb asks about, asks about those shooters back there. And Dolores just tells him we can talk about it later. And then she tells Ash and Giggles that they don't need Dempsey anymore, so just go ahead and get rid of him. And now we see Giggles' shirt is lit up, and it says angry.
Yeah.
And anyway, Liam starts begging them to just let him go, and Ash says, you've got your specs. Why don't you tell us what happens? Love her. And then Ash takes his glasses. And then he becomes very defiant, and he starts screaming about how they're the problem, the petty criminals. And since he can't fix them or get rid of them, ultimately that they're the ones creating the prison for humankind. Pretty bad thing to say to people who are like threatening to kill you, but he's a dipshit. We've already established that. Caleb tells them just to take it easy, and Liam tells Caleb that he's the worst of them, actually. And this is where we start to get Caleb flashing back into scenes from his time in the military. This first one, he's walking with a man who has a black hood over his head. And then Caleb just seems to start to have, like, PTSD for the rest of these scenes. He's got ringing in his ears, things like that. He sees another scene of, I think it's the same man that he was walking with, still has the hood over his head, and this time he's sitting in a chair, looking like he's about to be executed, tied to a chair. And all the while, Liam is screaming about how these people are nothings and they're dragged to the system, and Caleb's continuing to react with more thoughts in his head, and the words are ringing in his ears, and then he hears a gunshot. And at the same time, he sees, like, the hooded man in his mind being shot. But then he also looks up and sees that Liam has been shot, and it was Ash who shot him. So I like your theory that was an unpredictable move there. And then Ash and Giggles pretty much just peace out and leave.
Yes.
And Caleb immediately leans over Liam's dying body. He's trying to stop the bleeding. He's got his hands on his chest. The blood is just pouring out, so his hands are just getting really covered in blood. And this was a beautiful scene, if you can describe something so morbid and awful as beautiful. But it really was, because the waves are crashing around them, and Caleb is continuing to have these flashbacks. And so we see another one of the man with the hood, but this time without his hood on. And this man is like an older, balding man. So I'm wondering if this is somebody significant from Caleb's past, like maybe his dad or something. And then we also get a flashback of a lady who looks like she's experimenting on Caleb, and he's wearing a straight jacket, and he's got like VR glasses on, and he's for sure reacting violently to whatever he's seeing in these glasses. So these are just quick flashes as Liam's dying and the waves are crashing all around him. Oh, and Caleb also sees scenes as he sees the waves. He sees scenes of himself sitting at night on the pier contemplating suicide, the scenes that we saw from the first episode, second episode, whatever episode earlier. Anyway, the waves continue to all start crashing around them. Now they're mixing with the blood that's coming out of Liam. So it's beautiful and horrific all at the same time. And anyway, Liam finally slowly dies, or his last words to Caleb are, "You did it."
Yeah.
Caleb asks, "What did I do? Who do you think I am?" But Liam dies before he can say any more. And that's where we leave them for now. So you did it.
Yeah, at first I thought, of course we're going to see a different scene here in a minute, but at first I thought he must have killed his father.
Ugh, yuck. I don't like that. Well, he doesn't. We
know who kills his father.
Caleb's father?
No. I thought Liam was saying, because we see the guy in the hood and he says, "You did it." I thought maybe he's saying that Caleb, it was the one who was sent out to kill his father, Liam's father. But then, of course, we get a scene here in a minute that disproves that.
Oh, yeah. So maybe
that would have made sense.
So maybe like Ciroc sets up the scene.
But he doesn't. We see Ciroc. In fact, that's our next scene.
Make
we're
going
to see
like
Ciroc.
It's a plane crash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So still on his plane, Ciroc is now being informed that Dolores has actually accessed all of Ciroc's personal files.
Yeah.
And so we know that she's like learning about him personally. And so we get another image. And this is where I was like, is Ciroc talking to Dolores with this voiceover, maybe? You know, this is where it started hitting me that his voiceovers, he's speaking to somebody. So I knew it was going to close in. Anyway, we get another image of Rehoboam accessing files again with the multiple circles. And and this time, then it leads into an overview shot of a car driving through a desert. And suddenly now we're watching Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
As soon as they were in the desert, I was like, wait, wait, what show is this? Speaking of which, oh my God, I've had to bite my tongue. I'm not gonna digress here, but this week's Better Call Saul was so good. I can't wait to talk about it. We're gonna be back soon talking about that one. Anyway, in the car is really not our characters from Better Call Saul, but it's actually Dempsey Sr. and Sirach. And Sirach is saying that he has to stop the agitator who will destroy the world. But Dempsey is still against these experiments. So they're still arguing. Like, Sirach is saying, like, he's using these experiments to find agitators who will destroy the world. Like, maybe even he knows even this early on to be on the lookout for Dolores. You know, like, he's seeing something. Anyway, they see some smoke out in the distance. So they pull over the car and get out of the car. And I do love that we do get a shot of the back of this car, and it is a Lamborghini. Did you catch that?
Yes.
I thought that was fun. Awesome. Anyway, Dempsey is starts threatening to tell the world about what Sirach has done. And Sirach says, all those scenarios, anything you do, telling the world, anything, all of your threats will all end in human extinction. And this is why my brother wanted to kill you. And, Dempsey says that he took a look also into the system, and he knows he actually gets to walk away from this moment. So cocky, Dempsey. But Sirach explains that there are little moments like blips in the system where people get to make their own choices, truly free space, if you will. And then they walk over, and he shows Dempsey's plane crash that he has orchestrated. And at this point, the voiceover, we realize that the whole time that Sirach has been speaking directly to Rehoboam. And he says, that is how you came to be, Mon Ami, which is my love, or my friend, actually, in French. Me and my brother created you, and now I've got to ensure that you will outlive us both and that the strategy will succeed. Forgive us our sins for what we did, and what we did to save the world. And then Sirach says to Dempsey, I'm sorry, you didn't make it. And then he grabs him and bashes his head several times into the wing of the plane, and then drags his body into the wreckage and leaves him there.
Right. And this is what makes me also think that the whole part of Ash killing Liam was one of these holes in, you know, of free choice, where someone literally has a moment in time where they can actually make a choice that they didn't know that they were going to make.
Yes, 100% agree. And as we zoom out of this image, we see it's all unfolding in Dolores's eyeball. So it was so cool. Great shot that she is actually seeing all of this past, through that great contact lens she wears in her eyeball. So I love that great shot. And next we're in the airplane hangar where they've got a plane. They're clearly loading it up. And Dolores is now speaking directly to Sirach. And Sirach is saying, you know, this is my system and I control it. And of course we know this is just a Sirach hologram, and so does she. But it is fun to finally see Sirach and Dolores square off, right?
Yes.
Finally meeting. And Dolores says, you know, the people who made her always thought that they had control. But they're all dead now. And Sirach says, oh, you think you know me because you watched some of my memories? And Dolores says, well, I don't need to know you. I just need to know how to beat you.
Yeah.
And Sirach says, you've died too many times, Dolores. You're beginning to think that you are immortal. And she says, oh, no, I can be killed, same as you. And you know what? Your God can't protect you or your people. He says he has sacrificed so much, and he would continue to sacrifice so much more to save his people. And that even though we are flawed, he can change that. And then she steps in close and says, oh, like you changed your brother? And then she says, it's time everyone woke up. And then she walks through his hologram and he disappears. And then back on his plane, he looks at his Rehoboam watch, and the black circle is becoming very blurry on one side, like the circle is dissolving, if you will. And he reacts angrily upon seeing this. And we get this great shot of the view of his plane, the inside of his plane, with the clouds rolling by on either side. And then finally, Caleb receives a duffel bag from a mystery delivery person. That was kind of odd. Just hands him his bag and says, "I'm just the delivery guy." Interesting. Caleb does look down, sees that there's dry, crusty blood on his hands, which, my God, you were just at the beach. Why not wash them off a little bit better than that? But anyway, maybe blood on your hands is hard to get out. Right. I wouldn't know. Anyway, they're about to board the plane, and he tells Dolores, you know, maybe Liam was right. Maybe people shouldn't be shown the truth. And, you know, maybe they're going to be better off not knowing. And she says, well, you wanted to know. And he says, yeah, but I'm not like other people.
Mm.
And then she gives that great wink and the nod and the great line, neither am I. And we cut to credits. And I bet you in the next episode, the next episode, he still won't get it. Dumbass Caleb still won't
get it. He's not. Why does he need an implant if he's a host?
Huh?
Why does he need an implant if he's a host?
No, I'm saying he won't get it knowing that she is a host.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Like, he doesn't,
Duh, you've been shot 3 times and you were left for dead.
Yeah, right in the stomach.
Yeah, okay, you're not like other people, clearly.
It does make me think, so does that lead credence? We talked about this a few weeks ago. Was she just faking her injuries the last time?
Perhaps.
But she seemed legitimately injured, right?
Yeah, but that's true. She took those bullets and it didn't even...
Oh, yeah, she was cool.
That was close range. Yeah. I think she was faking it. Yeah, I do. I don't know, but because then Stubbs, is he faking his... Oh, my shoulder.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it's weird. Miles. I don't know.
There's some weird inconsistencies here. And I don't know if that's going to be a plot device or if that's
just poor bad writing. Yeah.
Woo, woo. All right. Let's wrap it up. So, you know what? We did. Roby didn't write us an email this time. We had several tweets after this episode. And let me just see if I can pull those up quickly and read off a few of Roby's comments. You can certainly follow us on Twitter at MikeTV1. We would love to hear your thoughts on Westworld, Better Call Saul, or anything else you'd like us to cover. And you can also send us an email, MikeTVpodcast@gmail.com. That's MikeTVpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, all right. You can tweet me at Rockdale_Tiger. And if, unlike Roby, you can be interactive with me throughout the week while I have currently been tweeting about really old football games.
Gotta get your football on. All right. Roby writes us, and I think some of these comments were actually from our last episode, so bear with me here. These are tweets. We love you, Roby. Thank you for tweeting us. Please keep it up. He writes, don't you think that the host in the park might accidentally get their pearl damaged by a guest shooting them? So they must have had a backup for all host personalities to download into fresh pearls. All Dolores had to do was download her backup into new pearls. Yeah, that's a good point, Roby. We did talk about that. Like, how could Dolores just, you know, like, overwrite these pearls? What's the significance of them if they're not, like, authentic data or whatever? So that's a good point. They do get damaged. Mm-hmm. And then, actually, Rockdale_Tiger writes. Yeah, writes, another possibility, but I still think an easy explanation is she just saved over the existing pearls. Think of them like a rewritable floppy disk. If you can think back that far. Good one, Rockdale_Tiger. Then Roby writes us, what baffles me is if Holoris, which of course is the Charlotte Hale Dolores blend. So if Holoris created new Dolores in Bernard's house, why have the scene where Dolores Prime basically wakes up to Holoris saying, this is who you need to be? maybe she created Yaculoris first. I like that, Yaculoris, and transferred the Prime Pearl from Hale to Prime Body. All right, Roby, now you're talking about too much brain ball switcheroo. I can't go down that path.
Hey, I brought that up in week two, I think. I still, if that's the case, they had to have created someone else first to move the balls around. I don't know. I still just think she's copied over. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe this is the worst plot point ever. I don't know.
Anyway, Roby says, I don't think all Dolores's are a connected hive mind. They're just separate copies working together. If connected, they wouldn't have had to have Prime and Dolores meet in the hotel to talk. Yeah, excellent point.
Very good. But at the same time, she knows immediately that Chibs dies during this episode.
Ooh.
So yeah. I think he's right in the fact that, like, obviously they need to talk to, or they do talk to one another, but at the same time, I think she can access any of them whenever she chooses to. So maybe it's not like omnipotence to where she constantly knows what's going on, but she can access, or she knows she can easily contact one of them. And that's the whole thing in her ear where she's talking to all technology all the time.
Yeah. Well, then he says, I don't think that she copied over. Okay, well, Roby's going to continue to argue this with you, Dean. I know you read these already, but I don't think that she was copied over. What would be the point? Also, no pearl for Hale. Roby, that we know of. As Dolores, before leaving the island, after shooting Bernard, had access to fresh pearls, why bother gathering pearls from bodies? Besides, she never met the samurai host, meaning Musashi. Did Dolores meet Musashi?
I don't think so.
Interesting. Pretty sure anyone, Roby goes on to tweet, pretty sure anyone with an implant is not a robot. If it's a simulation within a simulation, I'm noping out. If Caleb robot, I'm noping out. No human to root for then. Now, if someone's in the simulation and then still in the real world, then I'll still be in. Okay. Well,
here's the thing, Roby. There's only three episodes left. So
yeah, don't nope
even
out.
Yeah. Like, that'd be like, oh, the second to last episode, something happened I didn't like. I'm not going to like that. I'm with you. I don't want Caleb to be a robot either, but. Don't be a Tim Andrews, and as soon as something makes you upset about something because you don't like it, don't just nope out. Just stick with it, my man. You got it.
Yeah,
we can at least watch the next 3 weeks.
Yeah. All right. Finally, his final tweet, just a thought. What if Dolores put info that Serac is looking for in Bernard? Oh.
What I said earlier.
Yeah. Also, when Chaboris.
Wait, did I steal that from Roby?
Maybe I read it. I don't know. I don't know if you read this one. I don't know if you commented back on this one. I love this. I love all these names he's giving to these iterations. When Chaboris, he's calling her Chaboris. Only because we call him New Chibs.
Yeah.
Like, really, his name would be like
Maloris, or something.
I don't know, but I love Chaboris. That's fucking great. So also, when Chaboris told Dolores that Bernard was at the party, she said something about him being early.
Yeah.
Gave me the impression all was part of her plan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, there's a lot to think about here at the end of this episode, and my brain is already hurting. anything else to say before we wrap up here, Dean?
No, I'm interested to see how Maeve comes back into it and what role she plays. If she's still just playing the pawn of Serac. And I do hope eventually, I don't know. I've found myself rooting more for Dolores the past couple episodes. Like, even though she seems to be fucking the entire world up. And I do like the fact that Caleb is now questioning that at the end. So I do think there might be a rift there. Yeah. But I at least appreciate she seems to have a goal, I guess. I don't know. Whereas Serac definitely seems like too much of Big Brother.
Right. Ciroc is on a mission to control people. Dolores comes from a world where she was nothing but controlled. So she seems to be on this mission to like free people and give people back like free will. Right.
Right. So
in that regard, I agree. I'm on Dolores' side as well. I've actually found myself rooting for her.
And wasn't that Maeve's goal last season to free the robot? So you'd think they would be step in step
simpatico here. Yeah, you would think they would start working together here, but from the trailer it looks like tensions for sure are going to be heightened.
Oh no, we've seen from the very first trailer there's going to be some kind of showdown with that samurai sword where she cuts Dolores's arm off, so
yeah
we know.
Anyway,
that's coming.
That trailer definitely spoiled the fact that we know Maeve's okay, which we knew.
Still,
you know, hey. Well, anyway, yeah, three more episodes of Westworld, and oh my God, only one more episode of Better Call Saul. So we're going to be, our doubling up here every week is going to be coming to an end. We'll go back to just a weekly show after next week. But in just a couple of short days, we're going to be right back at you with our Better Call Saul Episode 9, Season 5, Episode 9 coverage. And boy, it was a doozy. So if you're watching Better Call Saul, we hope you will tune in to our Better Call Saul coverage. We have a lot to say about that show. We dive into Breaking Bad Easter eggs. We gush over the fabulous acting. We talk about predictions. We name who broke the most bad of every episode. So we have a lot of fun. So if you're listening to our Westworld coverage, please join us over there for our Better Call Saul coverage as it is winding down. So again, to contact us, it's miketvpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can find us at Twitter at MikeTV1 or at Rockdale_Tiger.
Yes. So until next time, I'm Lisa.
And I am Dean.
Please remember to
keep it thorough. And also make sure you keep washing your hands, stay 6 feet apart, yada, yada.
Follow all of the guidelines.
Stay clean, people.
Look for your government check.
Shit.
Mine still hasn't come.
Mine either.
Maybe when we next speak again. Talk to you next time.
All right. Bye.
2 luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.